Hey, you're listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And my name's Johnny Holston.
And we're going to go right into it. Johnny, tell us, what is your hot take?
My hot take is that when most companies are unhappy with their close rate or their the length of sales process, it's because they're treating their sales calls like slot machines and not like an assembly line.
I really can't wait to get into this because I have seen far too many sellers. I work in sales. I'm an accidental seller. That's what I always tell people. And I have sat on sales calls with other people and it's just like they have no idea what they're doing. It's more of just like, I'm going to say a bunch of stuff and hope something hits. Mm-hmm. And then once they finally manage to close a deal, it's like it goes into the ether and they have no idea what to do next. So I cannot wait to have you tell us more about, one, what everyone is doing wrong with this slot machine approach, but two, how can we actually fix this thing so that sales can be our growth engine and not just this annoying thing we have to do? So tell us a little bit more. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, exactly what you just described. Like when you sit on a call with some, and it's always easier to be the coach than it is the player, but it's a very, very real reality where when you're on in a sales call and when most reps are in a sales call, the data says that up to almost 70% of reps have no planned structure for their sales calls. So they're going into a game with no game plan, really. And that's where you get the slot machine mentality or the slot machine idea, which is, hey, we've got, you know, X amount of calls on the calendar. Let's show up to them. Let's pull the lever on the slot machine and let's see what happens. And it just like, gambling's not a thing to joke about necessarily, but a lot like when you have a lucky hit every now and then, or you have something that breaks your way, it can distort the way you view your own success and skill level. So in sales, sometimes someone will hit quota where they'll have a huge deal fall in their lap. And so now they have the misperception that they have the right plan when there's really a lot of room to grow and untapped upside. And so unlike slot machines, I want every company to think of their sales calls like a conveyor belt that is the assembly line, really, where it's a predictable output every single time. What I love about your mentality in this, Alyssa, is that you're not about being reactive. You're about being proactive. And so there's an idea of that where we're not going to be reactive to whatever happens on our sales calls. We are going to go into it with a strategy to lead them well and turn it into an assembly line rather than slot machines. So that's the concept there.
I think it's really important too to call out that every single salesperson who is still in the game has that like bluebird that just lands in your lap. And that becomes the big thing that you're so excited about. We all have those, right? But you're right. If that does become your entire personality of the one time you landed that one deal, and let's be honest, those are the ones we want to remember, right? I don't want to remember the 75 that told me that they didn't want to come hang out. They didn't want to play with my toys. I want to remember the one that was like, here's a blank check. I need to get rid of money this quarter. How would you spend this if you were me? Right? Yep. We all like those.
Yep.
And if those are the only ones that you remember and you fail to recognize that there was maybe 75 others that didn't hit, then you are going to end up with this bluebird personality, and that's never going to be successful. It's always going to be stressful because you're always going to basically hope for the luck of the draw rather than your actual skill and talent.
That's it. When you get the luck of the draw, be grateful for it, harness it, use that energy, thank your lucky stars and make the most of that. But at the same time, you don't want to make decisions or form many opinions around those because they're not the majority. You never want to make a decision around an outlier. Just like in good business, it doesn't matter if it's marketing or sales. You never want to make a decision or create a strategy around a random outlier. You want to make it around the common denominator. What's the most common thing that's happening and build to solve that. The manna from heaven, the random deals that fall in your lap, that I got to get rid of my budget this quarter, those will always come your way. So strategize and plan for the rest of them.
Yeah. Let's talk about process though, because what you're essentially saying is let's take it from that gambler's mentality to a assembly line. And I'm going to drop a stereotype here.
Do it.
I don't know a lot of salespeople who enjoy process. That doesn't seem to be the base level thing. When I think of process, I think of the operations people. I think of the delivery people. I do not think of the seller. They feel more like the gambler to me. So how do we get sellers to adopt a process if that's not their like default state? again, stereotyping, so you might prove me wrong.
Well, no, you're right. I think what makes a lot of salespeople great is the, and sometimes this is like a natural talent conversation. And I think there's a few things. People with no quote unquote natural talent for selling can become exceptional sellers when they decide they're going to abide by a process. And then the people who have exceptional talent for selling, abiding by a process doesn't make you worse. It makes you better. And I think that one thing that's really important is when you install a process into a salesperson's world, it's really important that that process does not strip away what's unique about them and what makes them successful. And so the way I like to view the process, anytime we install a process for specifically a sales conversation in a company, is to look at it from the perspective of how can we make this a playground, not a prison? And how can we do it in a way that provides more structure to every conversation, but doesn't do it in a way that reduces the salesperson to just a cog in a system? That person has to be able to maintain their uniqueness and their own approach and the flavor that makes them great while having the same outcome as everybody else, but without making their life rigid and overly structured.
I think the playground, not a prison, is a really important point, because it's almost like you're going to have to sell this concept, this process, this thing to the salesperson. Because for it to be successful, they need to play ball. And if they're not going to play ball, they're never going to adopt this process. It doesn't matter how good or smart or incredible or life-changing your process is if the people who need it haven't adopted it and aren't going to play.
Yeah, and I can't take credit for playground, not prison. We have friends over at StoryBrand who have the marketing framework. That's an analogy they use all the time. I don't know where it came from, but I love thinking of it that way. If you have the idea that everything we do is a playground and we just need to find a way to make the playground more successful to the outcomes we're looking for, then you're going to have a lot, you know, healthier or happier salespeople as they try to play on that playground.
And I do think that there is really has to be an intent conversation here, because I've worked with a lot of organizations, big organizations, who put these processes in place because some VP of some department wants a certain report. So therefore, everybody has to input this data for their report. And if your process is intended to make your salespeople better and more efficient, then that's good. If your process is intended to just produce reports at the expense of your salespeople's way of working, that's not as good.
No, it's sort of it's not necessarily vanity metrics, but it's metrics for the sake of metrics. And the way that I like to think of it is any sort of process, it needs to increase the salesperson's likelihood of closing a sale and potentially making that more efficient, which should always be the goal. Next is to remove bad leads from the process as early as possible. And so when you combine those two ideas of, hey, let's stack the cards in the salesperson's favor, and then let's do what's right by our prospects and our leads, which is to remove the ones that aren't a good fit as early as possible, what you end up with is an easier process for the salesperson and for the buyer. And if leadership or executive wants a report for a specific reason and they need some certain data, that's okay. But how can we still mesh that with increasing the odds of closing a deal, making life better for the customer? Because now you can get the report or the metrics that you need while actually improving the process at the ground level, which should really be the ultimate goal.
I like the idea too of like, okay, let's stack the deck and remove any barriers, because how many times do we hold on to bad leads because we aren't willing to admit it's a bad lead? It's an unqualified lead. Well, they might have budget. They might want the thing that we have. Like, there's almost a fear of missing out, like a FOMO with our leads, and we're not willing to drop them, even if we know that they are not a qualified lead.
It's the same idea as that crazy deal that came out of nowhere. We all have that one deal that like seemed dead, or the prospect was not qualified, and then for some reason, miraculously, something happened and it came through. And then again, if we start steering our actions and our energy towards the outliers, we're not going to end up with a system that's creating results that we want. So yeah, you definitely save those away for a rainy day. Put them on your close lost, or take them out where you need to put them in your wherever it goes in your CRM and your sales process. Follow up with them when you have extra time. Check back in, get them on a sequence, but don't steer your strategy and your thinking towards people who generally aren't fit. I think that's a very good point there. It's a tie-in to the random slot machine hit.
Yeah. The other thing too is that occurs to me as you're telling us this, it feels like to me in the sales organizations that I've interacted with, that close lost is almost like a dirty word, like it's an admission of defeat and they're not willing to do it, or it gets them in trouble. So, I mean, would you recommend that people are pretty aggressive with their close lost, or how long can something linger in a potential deal state before you're like, you need to just admit that that one's dead?
Yeah. Well, I would always look for ways to, it depends on the quality of your lead flow when the answer to this question. So if you're in a situation where maybe you're getting tons of qualified leads consistently and you know your marketing's dialed in, you know that generally you're getting qualified conversations sent your way, then you might not want to be as aggressive because you have a track record of, you know what marketing's giving you. But in other situations where you have tons of poorly qualified leads coming in, and sometimes that's just the business, sometimes that's just reality, right?
Yeah.
Especially in sales. And you should be aggressive with that, because if you can have total clarity and answer the question, what needs to be true for this person to move forward with me or to buy from me? And if you've got three or four things that need to be true and you might only have one, I think you need to be pretty aggressive with getting rid of that, because your energy is better focused on the ones that have all the things that you need. And I would say be aggressive with it, because you open more space in your mind to pursue the people that are worthy of your attention and are good fit customers.
And on your calendar too. Like, I've seen deals where they meet every week for 6 weeks and it's never going anywhere because they're, for whatever reason, and you're just blowing up your calendar for no reason.
Absolutely. You're blowing up your time, or maybe you're putting a ton of follow-up efforts into people who maybe they want to do business, but they're just not qualified. I told this story the other day and I talk about it all the time. Client we worked with, they had a rep who was, he was really treating his calls like slot machines instead of a conveyor belt. But the issue is he was so poor at ruling out people who weren't a good fit. And he was also really bad at assigning next steps and giving buyers an opportunity to opt in or opt out, that his calendar was so full of follow-up with people who likely weren't qualified that he, out of his own dime, hired someone to work out of his home to do all the follow-up for him. And you run into those situations where it's like the mindset behind this is so broken that we would rather, out of our own pocket, pay someone to follow up with pointless leads than we are to just admit the fact that they're probably not moving forward and steer our energy in better directions. So that's some of the stuff you can get into when you don't want to do what you're talking about here.
So if someone is hearing this, they're listening to this conversation, and either they're in that where they're kind of like so far, they're in so deep, they have to dig their way out, right? To continue that gambling metaphor.
Right.
Or you know, they do feel a little bit like maybe they're not that far in, but they do feel a little bit like they're going into meetings and just hoping for a bluebird and are ready to join this more specific proven process. What is the first thing that they need to do? What's the first step?
The first step is really, you should look back at your last, we'll say 10 buyers, and ask yourself, what were the six things? I usually have six categories that I like to think of in our sales process or in our sales conversations. What were the six things that you did during that sales process that you want to make your new go-to, your new playbook? And think of the categories of identifying pain. We want to identify the pain our prospect is having. We want to qualify them. We want to match them with a solution. We want to open the floor for great Q&A, make it a two-way discussion. And then we want to have clear next steps and a commitment to advance or close. So either closing the deal or closing the next conversation. Think of whatever those six categories mean for your sales process and make it a standard, make it a process, and put it in your own language, in your own company's terms. Implement what makes your sales process special and unique. Make those six things. We use the analogy, our company's called Bridge Selling. So we think of the analogy that closing sales like crossing a bridge. And if you think left to right, put those six topics across a bridge. Now, when you go into your conversations, you don't have to just accept wherever the buyer might take it and pull another lever on the slot machine. You can actually steer that conversation with the intention in mind for those six things. And I would look backwards and say, what went well on all those deals and how can I standardize that moving forward? Because if you're not reaching the same quality of conversation within each of those topics with somebody, that's a sign that there's something that's wrong and they're likely not a good fit.
Would you recommend this is kind of the order, right? Like identify the pain, qualify the prospect, then dive into your solution. Cause I have been on so many calls where they open with the solution and says, does this resonate?
Yeah, you're doing it the wrong way. If in my opinion, that's the wrong way to go about it. If you're doing cold calling or heavy outbound, sometimes you do have to open with some sort of a preview of the solution. But then once you get that in, that buy-in to continue the conversation, it's important that as early as reasonable, you can go into uncovering the pain. Because all of us sell stuff that has 25 different solutions. But if we talk about the 25 different solutions instead of the three that actually connect to the pain point of the buyer, that's where you get into trouble. And that's where you get into people misunderstanding your product or just not being interested. I think an analogy that I love, or not an analogy, a story that I like to tell about a company who did this very well was a brick and mortar fitness facility that I got to work with a while ago. And they had a process of touring. When they had a family come in to tour, they would it would take an hour. They would show them everything about their facility and then sit down. And by the time you got there, the buyer was like exhausted. Their customer was a mom with two or three kids. And that's not a pleasant sales experience. So we reoriented the thinking around, can we learn the top two or three pain points that this mother's having as it relates to our location? We're going to do a 10-minute tour instead around only the two or three things that would solve a problem for her. And that's the way I think we should all think about our sales process. When we can show the 100 things, let's start with the three that solve the biggest pain. And to understand what that pain is, we have to ask great questions and discover.
Yeah, I can only imagine, like, if I'm going to tour into a fitness facility and you're really showing me what I would call like the bodybuilder section, like, babe, I just want to walk on the treadmill. Like, I'm
great
not here to do the whole thing.
You nailed it. Yes. Yeah. If you're not into pickleball, don't show me the pickleball.
Don't show me the pickleball courts. Yes. Right. If I'm just here to swim, show me the swimming pool.
That's it. That's it.
So if we're kind of in wild agreement here that this needs to be done differently, why are we still having this problem? Like, why are you in business? Why has this not been solved? Why haven't we waved our magic wand to make that? We agree. So why aren't people doing it?
Well, I think a lot of people, and even as we talk about these things, most sales reps will be saying, yeah, I agree. I do that. I think I do that, but we don't do that the way we think we do. So that's why I'm still in business, is even though people broadly agree with these things, execution is hard. And the reason that execution is hard is because it's often not scoring. It's not easy to score and it's not easy to measure. So when we talk about sales metrics, one of my favorite things to do when I speak to sales leaders is ask, hey, what metrics are you tracking the most? And you will get all kinds of questions. The next question that I like to ask is, how do you measure the effectiveness of your conversation or the success and the quality of your conversation only and nothing else? And you'll get a lot of tech will have scoring capabilities, but it's built on very broad generalizations. So you might get a score that relates to that conversation, but we know it's not what we really think. It doesn't really reflect the quality of the conversation at the end of the day. And so the nice thing is, when you make up your mind on what are the six things that need to happen or what are these topics we're going to cover, the next step is actually to turn that formula or that score, that structure and that framework into a unique scoring formula for yourself and your sales process and your company. And so the way I like to look at this is that bridge is worth 100 points. And each one of those boxes is worth a specific amount of points. Now, that is the work that we really do as we help company determine, is pinpointing the pain worth more? Is step six worth more? What does it mean for your company? But even if you're just a sales rep or a sales leader doing this on your own, it's harder to execute because we don't typically have a pattern of feedback where when we end a conversation, even if you're not scoring it with tech, if in your mind you can know, I have 100 points available on this call, and you can start doing the math of 0 points if you skip a step, half the points if you make some progress but don't succeed, and then full credit if you succeed, you'll get a number out of that conversation, which is, this is the fun part. Most reps say, I think I'm at 70, 80, 90 out of 100. Then when we go back and listen to calls and actually think about it with this new perspective, you see 30, 40, 50 out of 100 because there's a lot of partial progress, but there's not a lot of full success. And so when a rep is able to change their mind, now they can start to think of in an actual metric, the way that conversation went, it becomes easier to apply and stick.
Okay, so two things. One, I agree. I think it's really hard in the moment to like hold a mirror up to yourself, because if I get off this podcast, right, we finish this program, I'd be like, well, that was really good. And then I listen to it later and I'm like, oh man, I wish I would have followed up this way. I wish I would have done that this way, right? Or sometimes the other way, I'm like, I don't know about that episode. And then I'm like, okay, actually, that was pretty good. So, you know, that in the moment, we're really bad judges of our own success and execution in the moment. Like holding up a mirror just doesn't work in that exact instance. But I also love that you have gamified this process, right? Tapped into that natural competitiveness and said, okay, there's 100 points to get and I'm going to get as many of them as I can. That really changes the mindset and allows people to say, there's more to this than just a squishy feely like, oh, that call went good. Like, no, there's some points to win here. There's a game to win here. And I think that's a really smart psychological tactic with salespeople.
It ties also into, if we think of 100 points as a closed deal, it ties into the example you gave earlier, which is 6 meetings in a row with little to no progress. Imagine you have that scoring system in your head or on a dashboard in front of you. So you know going into that second conversation, I still have no points in qualification. I still have no real points in timeline. Now you're going into the second call or third call or whatever call with the new strategy built around getting the remaining points left. You've got 30 points left. I'm going to get these on the next call or two. If you can't get them, that means it's not a great fit. So it actually helps you make a better decision when it comes to those closed loss examples. Like, hey, I've done all I can. I can part ways and feel good about it.
And rather than just rehash the same call over and over 6 times in a row and keep redoing the same thing, I think that's really important too, of thinking about it on a continuum. Like, yeah, okay, you only got 30 points on this first call. You got another call, you got another chance. All right, you got a chance to get those last 70. So let's go in with that game plan. I think that's really smart.
Yep. And sometimes that first call, really, it depends on your sales process. If you're not a one call close, which many, many companies are not, right? You want to think of what's normal for points on a first call. Is it normal to get 25 or 30, but to close a sale, we know we need 100. So what does this look like for us? What's our goal for that first call? And how long should it take to getting the full score as a way to look at it too? And it should all be about scoring those points.
You know, thinking about all of the people that you know or aspire to know, who else is out there? Who else should we be listening to?
Well, one of my favorites is Scott Galloway. I don't know if you're familiar with Scott Galloway, but I just love his ruthless, blunt, a little bit dry personality. And he's somebody that I listen to all the time. He's got great thoughts on sales. I always love listening to him any chance I can. I was just listening to a 3-year-old podcast that he was on this morning. So I always go back to the Scott Galloway well.
And if someone is really connecting with you and they want to learn more, where can they find you online?
Absolutely. BridgeSelling.com. That's a great place to get engaged with me, but I'm on LinkedIn way too much, like most of us are. So Johnny Holston, Johnny with no H. Or you put in Johnny Bridge Selling, I'll probably come up. Send me a message. Tell me you listen to this podcast and I will respond because I'm on way too much. So that's the best way to do it.
So before we let you go, in our pre-recording conversation, you mentioned that you were producing a book, putting out a book. So tell us more about the book. What is it about? What can we expect and where can we get it when it goes out?
Yep. It'll be on Amazon when it comes out. And I'm sure we'll have a way to buy it on our website. We're in the process of dotting our I's and crossing our T's with it, but it's called The Missing Sales Metric. It actually ties into what we're talking about here, which is creating that metric, that 100 point bridge score, we call it, for your sales process, your business, your company, your buyer. So that's what the book is all about. It's about how to design your bridge, create a custom bridge score, all those fun things that kind of resonate with what we talked about today. So you can find the book on Amazon, The Missing Metric, and then I believe it's going to be bridgeselling.com/book is also a place to join the waitlist and learn more.
Awesome. Well, I will be a name on that waitlist. I'm really looking forward to your book. Thank you so much for a great conversation today. This was not only really interesting, but really useful and practical. So I hope everyone got as much out of it as I did.
Thanks for having me, Alyssa.